I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. The news that we get every day from Iraq is full of brutality and death. In most cases, that news refers to the events in the southern two-thirds of Iraq. Northern Iraq is different, at least the area under Kurdish control. Yes, there's violence there, too, but when compared with the rest of the country, the region known as Iraqi Kurdistan has been relatively calm. That has a lot to do with the history of northern Iraq since the first Gulf War back in 1990. The World's Middle East correspondent Quil Lawrence recounts that history in a new book of his. It's called Invisible Nation: How the Kurds' Quest for Statehood is Shaping Iraq and the Middle East. Quil says that many Kurds still have bitter memories of what happened after the first Gulf War.
The Kurds thought America was at their back, and it took them a few days to realize, America wasn't going to help them. And Saddam started to slaughter them. And at that point, the entire population of Iraqi Kurdistan decided to leave. They'd seen Saddam's wrath before in the form of poison gas, and they went walking barefoot across the snowy mountains to Turkey and to Iran, and at one point about 100 per day were dying of exposure. What ensued was the first humanitarian intervention in history, when Britain and the United States and France and several other countries reinvaded Iraq with the United Nations blessing to create a safe zone for the Kurds.
That was when?
1991.
So fast forward to George W. Bush. Even with all this distrust that was generated after the first George Bush promised to help the Kurds against Saddam Hussein and then backed off, why were they so trustful of the Americans this time around?
I think really the Kurds keep on finding themselves in a situation where they have no one else. There's no choice. And in fact, despite the way things have gone in Iraq and so many of the mistakes, still if you talk to many Kurds today, they'll say, look, we love the guy. He took out Saddam. Saddam's grandchildren were going to be ruling us, is what I've heard them say. And everyone else was too smart to do it. This guy actually did it, and we love him. As soon as they saw the statue come down in Baghdad, they were celebrating, and they were very happy to work alongside the Americans.
Okay, that was 5 years ago, April 9th, 5 years ago. And that day you filed a story for us. This was from Erbil, though. This is from the northern Iraqi city. And we're going to play a clip of this. Here's how you describe the reaction to the Kurds watching what was happening in Baghdad with the statue of Saddam being pulled down.
Throngs of residents waved Kurdish flags and chanted "Down with Saddam" as they filled the center of town. Saddam killed my father, my brother, and my uncle, says Isa Anua. Almost 200,000 Kurds died in the regime's ethnic cleansing campaign in the 1980s. Since the 1991 Gulf War, another 100,000 have been forced to leave their homes in cities under Saddam's control and flee here to the north. The Kurds have been waiting a long time for this day.
If they'd been waiting a long time for the day that Saddam, symbolically anyway, was no longer the president of Iraq, they were no longer under his thumb, what were they expecting?
Well, when this all happened, the Kurds thought they'd died and gone to heaven. Saddam was gone, and the people coming in to manage the occupation for the Americans looked to be great friends of the Kurds. General Jay Garner, who was put in charge of the post-invasion reconstruction at first, and Zalmay Khalilzad, who was supposed to be in charge of the political side. Of course, both of these men were soon replaced by Paul Bremer, who the Kurds had a mixed feeling about. He was both a disaster personally. He didn't know anything about Kurdistan and didn't seem to have much goodwill towards them. But the things he did, which most people consider mistakes, the Kurds thought were just perfect.
Like what?
He abolished the army, and many people point to that as one of the seminal errors in the post-invasion strategy. But for the Kurds, this meant suddenly there was no force within Iraq that could ever subjugate them again.
Okay, so as part of that sense of expectation, you spent a lot of time there in northern Iraq, and you met a man, you filed a report on him. You say that he had been forced to leave his house by Saddam Hussein. First off, tell us why he was forced to leave.
The Kurds have been rebelling against the Iraqi state ever since there's been an Iraqi state, since 1919. Under the government of Saddam Hussein, there were rebellions in the 70s and all through the 80s. And eventually, in the mid-80s, Saddam decides that Kurdish rebels aren't the problem. It's just the Kurds themselves. And he implements sort of what most people consider a genocidal campaign, razing villages to the ground, cutting down forests, and using poison gas. He also started evicting Kurds from Kirkuk. So when Kirkuk fell, the city of Kirkuk fell on April 10th, 2003, a wave of Kurdish refugees went home looking for their old houses.
Okay, so here's one who had returned.
You came back today. Did you bring all of your things?
Nothing. I have nothing. I am a refugee.
A Kurd named Nuzad says he's been wandering around Kirkuk for a day. He says he still feels dazed to be back in his home city after 10 years in a refugee camp.
Assalamu alaikum.
Nuzad jumps in the car and we head for his old neighborhood. But there's not much left of it. In 1991, Ali Hassan Majid, known up here as Chemical Ali, leveled hundreds of Kurdish homes in the neighborhood. A flat, vacant lot with a few trash heaps is all that remains of 400 homes, including Nuzad's.
What we've seen since then in the city of Kirkuk has been interesting. I think the Kurds came in expecting they would be able to take it back, and they were a little bit overconfident, cocky about this. There were many things what the American forces started calling housejackings, where Kurds were evicting Arabs who Saddam had moved there and taking their houses away.
Just to make a quick point here, we should say Kurds are not Arabs, despite the fact that Iraq is an Arab country.
Right. Kurds are Sunni Muslims, but they're not Arabs. They're ethnically different. They're different from Turks. It's really hard to define what a Kurd is. They have populations in Turkey, in Syria, in Iran, and Iraq. That area has been known as Kurdish land for millennia, but they've never had their own country.
What has it been like for these Kurds in northern Iraq, and how has their fate been a great departure from what we see in the rest of Iraq?
Well, these two paths have kind of split, and I have to say that covering Iraq was personally a heartbreaking experience. I was in Kurdistan in the north before the war. I caught some of their optimism. I thought that things were going to be, this is speaking personally, I just thought things couldn't be worse than they were under Saddam Hussein. And the chaos and the car bombs, and even now with things improving, Iraq has been such a heart-wrenching place for so many Iraqis, and documenting it has been really grueling. But going up to Kurdistan, you see a sense of optimism. You see people building things. You see a people that feel like they've never really had it this good, and they finally got a chance at living with their own ways in their own land.
So that's why you say in the prologue to your book, America has played midwife to a Kurdish homeland that cannot be unmade save by catastrophe. That catastrophe could begin with American departure.
Right. The nightmare scenario is that the civil strife or civil war that we've seen in Iraq, without America there, mostly just to keep out the neighboring powers, that war could go regional. And at that point, if the Americans have left, the Kurds really wouldn't have anyone to protect them. They can protect themselves from any force inside Iraq right now. But the Turkish army and the Iranian army, they have helicopters, they have tanks, and the Kurds are no match for them. I hope that in this one corner of Iraq, things can continue to go well, and I certainly hope that in the rest of Iraq, things can stabilize for all of the wonderful people I've met through the years of covering it.
All right. Thank you very much. Quil Lawrence, Invisible Nation is the name of the book, How the Kurds' Quest for Statehood is Shaping Iraq and the Middle East. Thanks a lot, Quil.
Thank you, Lisa.
See pictures of Quil in northern Iraq at theworld.org.